Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Oh, I'm so excited this week to bring to you two human beings who happen to also be personal friends of mine, Heather and Josh Avis. They operate a company called The Lucky Few, which is a social awareness brand on a mission to create a more inclusive world with an emphasis on shifting the Down syndrome narrative. They work toward this mission through the diverse and inclusive content they create on their Instagram account, The Lucky Few Official, and the books that Heather writes, The Lucky Few, Scoot Over and Make Some Room, and the stages that Heather ends up speaking on. They have a multi-ethnic, ability-diverse, adoptive family, and they know that this place, this world that we live in, is a place that every single person belongs, that we can only embrace our differences if we're able to celebrate them, and that life is better when we make room in our lives for those who have been missing. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Heather and Josh Avis to the Rise Together podcast.
What would the world look like if we all pushed ourselves to have candid conversations with people who didn't look like us, think like us, or live like us? I'm Dave Hollis, and I'm on a mission to learn more about this world by meeting more of the people who live here. You may not always agree with everything you hear, but I guarantee you'll come away more informed on topics you might never have thought to seek out before. This isn't just a podcast, it's a community. And when we raise each other up, we all rise together.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we have Josh and Heather Avis, or Heather and Josh Avis. I don't know the sequence of how we introduce these human beings, but they are amazing. They happen to be personal friends of mine. Do not be biased by the fact that I actually like these people a lot in real life. But they together work on something called The Lucky Few. And they have what I would call a social awareness brand that is on a mission to create a more inclusive world where the emphasis on shifting the narrative around Down syndrome is a big part of what they do every single day. They work towards this mission through the diverse and inclusive content they create on their hit Instagram account, The Lucky Few. And Heather is a prolific writer of books. The Lucky Few is her first book, Scoot Over and Make Some Room, her second. They are available everywhere. We will include links in the show notes to make sure that all of you can pick them up. But more than anything, they are trying to shout the worth of people that sometimes are not afforded their worth being shouted about. As a multi-ethnic, ability-diverse, adoptive family, they know that this world is a place where everyone belongs, that we can not only embrace our differences, but we should celebrate them, and that life is better when we make room in our lives for those who have been missing. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Heather and Josh Avis to the Rise Together podcast. Friends!
Hey, woo! Friends!
I'm so excited that you guys are here. All right, so that was my introduction. Would you take a moment and more eloquently introduce yourselves and your work to the listeners who maybe are not yet familiar with the amazing things that you're doing to be light in this world?
Yes, that was very eloquent, Dave, and very informative. I feel like you hit it all.
That's a lot of words.
Yeah.
A lot.
Everything Dave just said, that was great. So I feel like we have to go back towards the beginning or back up a bit to really get to where we're at. And the short of it is, and we can unpack this however you choose, we grew our family through adoption. And our first adoption was a little girl with Down syndrome. And it's a long story. We weren't looking for a child with Down syndrome. That it happened to us. Thank God for that. And once we brought her home, it didn't take long for us to realize that this world does not make space for people who have Down syndrome, for lots of different kinds of people, but specifically to us, for people who have Down syndrome. And so all the systems that put together what our life day-to-day looks like work for me as an able-bodied, neurotypical white woman, and for my husband, who is also able-bodied, neurotypical white male. And they don't work for my kid who has Down syndrome. And so for me, as her mom, and Josh can speak for himself, but for Josh as her dad, that's just unacceptable. And that, so it started really organically in trying to make room in the world for our daughter Mason to be herself, fully herself, not to have to conform to what more neurotypical children do, but to show up fully as herself. And in order to do that, systems need to be rebuilt, broken down and rebuilt. And so I would say that we are creatives who do this work mostly through storytelling and creating content that gives people an opportunity to take note of what's happening around them and in their own world, and then to scoot over and make some room and to shift things in their own spaces in a way that works for everybody, not just for them. Because I think when we create spaces that work for everybody, we're all better off. That's what we've learned.
I had Dr. Ed Barron on not terribly long ago, and we were talking about how the system is not broken. The system is absolutely 100% created to produce the outcome that it produces. Yeah. And I think a lot of the work that you do is to challenge the possibility of a new system that might actually accommodate space for anyone who is not currently advantaged by the system that disadvantages them. I know you don't only have Mason. You also ended up also adopting two other human beings, which ends up creating additional layers of interesting make room for conversations in how Truly and Augie end up becoming a part of your story as well. Tell me a little bit about your other kids too.
Yeah, so our oldest Macy that we've already spoke about, she's 12, and then we have a 9-year-old, Truly, and then we have a 6-year-old, August. And the story goes with bringing True home, who's also adopted. We went through a private agency trying to control as much as we could with Macy, and then man, that got flipped. The universe really flipped that upside down. And so the second round, we went through the county, which is a whole different ballgame. But we knew if the universe is going to do this anyways, let's keep our hands open. So we went into it thinking, okay, we're not sure what we're going to get. We had some parameters, but we said yes to a lot of things. And because it's the county, things tend to be a little bit crazier in terms of you may get a sibling, you may get all kinds of different substance abuse and all these things. I mean, you know, you're an adoptive dad. And so, you know, what happened was we got a perfectly newborn little girl, healthy newborn little girl that is African-American in Guatemala. And so that brings into the multi-ethnic part of our family. And that's Truly Star. She's our spicy little middle child who lives up to her name. Oh gosh, we could do a whole episode. We could do a whole episode on Sawyer and on Truly.
1,000%. Truly yes. Is destined to change this world, period. End of sentence. But we could do a full episode about her greatness. Yes.
So then we have three kids and we continued to grow our family. We had two little girls and it was about time to adopt again. And we weren't looking. Again, the universe does what the universe is going to do. And this is part of a story that we've stepped into. I'd like to say it's like the flow, you know, we jumped in and we were presented with a little boy. Well, we were presented with a mom who had a little boy in her tummy that in utero, she discovered that he has Down syndrome and a congenital heart defect. And we weren't looking to adopt another kid with Down syndrome. And one thing led to another. We got to know her, and a lot of awkward conversations in the beginning, a lot of heartfelt, is this what we're going to do? A lot of prayer, a lot of talking with our community. And as we step closer and closer to this family, this was our little boy. And that brings us to August Riker, and he's our youngest. He's the baby. And we have a beautiful relationship with birth family, and he's our little introvert. He's our little creative. He's like a feeler. He's so in tune with the room. If mom and dad, in COVID, he's come up to us quite a bit, and just, he'll put his arms around us and say, it's going to be okay.
Is he holding Woody when he tells you that, or is that?
Yes, he has a love for Toy Story. Oh. All things
so,
Toy
Story. The Lucky Few is the name of the company, is the name of your first book, is kind of the mission that you are pursuing. Will you explain a little bit about what the name means and why you felt called to share your story and what you hope people might take away from embracing the idea of being one of the Lucky Few?
Sure. Prior to bringing our oldest daughter home, when we started the adoption journey, we were pursuing a child, a healthy infant. And I think a lot of people, like when they're pregnant and you say, what do you want? You say, I want a healthy infant. And then we find out about a little girl with Down syndrome. And my ideas about what it meant to be the parent of a child with Down syndrome were all negative. There wasn't a positive idea there. And this is coming from, this is like a lot of backstory, but I was a special education teacher. And so I had these incredible students who had Down syndrome who I adored with all of me as their teacher and their families I loved, but not as the mom, right? Like that's a whole other scenario. And then Mason comes home and it took us like a split second to recognize that she is just magic and that her Down syndrome, and then over time, recognizing that her Down syndrome is in fact an asset. And we've only ever thought of it as a deficit prior to bringing her home. And even in those early years as her parent, maybe early months as her parents. And I just remember one day thinking, I remember actually being in a public space with her when she was a real little baby and there were lots of people around and lots of kids. She was the only kid with Down syndrome, which is often the case when we're out and about in the world. Well, besides her brother. And thinking, wow, no one else here has a kid with Down syndrome. I am so lucky. I'm so lucky to get to be the mom in this room who has a kid with Down syndrome, and feeling so overwhelmed by that. And then just started using it as a hashtag, the Lucky Few on Instagram. And it just kind of got bigger than we are. And so over the years, just realizing, having a similar conversation with parents, especially expecting parents, thousands of times hearing from expecting parents that they learn their child has Down syndrome and their reaction is devastation and their reaction is grief. And then talking to those parents 6 months later, 6 weeks later, six years later, whatever it is, and they've completely changed their tune and 100% feel lucky. And so that tells me that there's an incredible disconnect between what we think is and what really is.
Yeah.
And somehow it's not being communicated clearly enough because people still feel devastated at this diagnosis. So it is our goal. We talk about shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome and shifting that narrative. And for us, the narrative shift is that when people think of Down syndrome, they equate that to goodness. They equate that to an asset. They equate that to being really lucky.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
What's interesting for me personally, because your children have been to our home, we vacationed in Hawaii together.
That's right.
The opportunity for my kids to interact with and experience the wonder, the awesomeness, the beauty that is your brood has for them normalized, oh, wow, they're rad. They're awesome. Yes, they may have some things that present differently, but their differences don't make them bad. They just end up being different. And I think part of, man, the mission of this podcast, but also I think the mission of your work is to hopefully in some of the storytelling, introduce the possibility that different doesn't have to have a negative connotation, that different can just be different, and different can also be beautiful and can it can be amazing. I mean, your kids, forget about it. They are amazing children. They happen to see the world through a completely different lens, and they happen to experience things that other people that don't have Down syndrome will probably never, ever totally appreciate or experience. But there's beauty in the way that they are ultimately processing the world and experiencing the world.
Yeah.
You have this mission of trying to create a more inclusive world. I'm going to assume that it's born out of, obviously, the composition of your family. But was there a single moment at some point early on where you said, you know what, we should just go do this work? This is the work of our life. This is the calling that we've been put on the planet for. Or is it just something that kind of organically happened over time?
I think we both have different answers. For me, it organically happened. It was a series of stepping into opportunities and doors opening and me saying, sure, let's try. Sure, let's try. Initially. So social media is a good example, because I started our social media account, The Lucky Few Official, almost 9 years ago.
Wow.
So Instagram was pretty new. I mean, Instagram's 10 years old. And I just did it like, oh, this, let's just post a picture a day of Macy and show the world a little, or whoever, the 100 people following, what it looks like to have a kid with Down syndrome. And then a friend of ours reposted it, and then all of a sudden I have 15,000 followers, and then 30,000 followers, which for anybody is a lot of followers. But, you know, 7 years ago on Instagram, that was a lot of followers, and almost everyone's engaged, right? That long ago. And I had a moment where I was reading through a bunch of different comments on a thread that I had missed of a picture of Mason. And someone said, so-and-so, have you tagged a friend? Have you heard of this account? And she tagged back and said, yes, this is why we are adopting Rufy. And I went, whoa, what? And I like started digging and found this woman. And when I finally got in touch with her, she was in China that moment adopting their daughter with Down syndrome. And she said, because of our family. And that was a defining moment for me where I realized, okay, I am living out, I have been just kind of saying, oh, sure, we'll try, we'll try. And there was a moment of that, let's be a little more intentional here and really look at the impact of what is happening in what is in our hands and see how huge that is. And then in recognizing that, like I said, being more intentional, stepping into it with understanding the grandness of the opportunities that we had.
I love it. It's so good. And what's interesting is I can remember Rachel and I read Jen Hatmaker's book, Interrupted, and it was about interrupting your otherwise normal, perfect life with the possibility of introducing something unconventional or something you didn't think you were necessarily suited for. And in part, it talked about their adoption journey, and it was a seed that was planted that led us into adoption as a thing that would become a part of the foreverness of our family. And it changed the way that I thought about, wow, if maybe I can in storytelling about our adoption journey in a book that I might write or a podcast I might do. Maybe it'll change the way that somebody who previously had some stigma around adoption or stigma around anything that is uncomfortable or different affords them the permission to think differently about it. I love that story. And it is so true for anyone who's listening. If you have a story, your story may in fact be the thing that gives someone the courage to think differently about what is possible for their life because of seeing a little bit of themselves in you. So do that. Speaking of books, in your most recent book, Scoot Over and Make Some Room, you tell some fun stories of your kids growing up, as well as the heartbreaking stories that I know many people might feel a little uncomfortable to read about. I'm sure it's impossible to pick, but is there a single story from the book that particularly holds a special place in your heart as you want to try and encourage people to make some room for people who are a little bit different?
Yeah, I can start the story. You can hop in. It is the hip hop story,
yeah,
Dave.
That's what I was going to say.
It is the hip hop story that has forever woven itself into every bit of me. Mason loves to dance, and we didn't put her into a dance class until she was about 8 years old, and it's complicated, but it's hard to find extracurricular activities in which people with disabilities are fully included if it's not specific to disability. And we didn't want her in a disabled dance class. We have nothing against that. We just know that she lives in this world and she's going to participate in this world and everything she does. So we chose the nearest hip hop studio and we sent her. I just emailed the dance instructor and just say, hey, our daughter's coming to your studio and she has Down syndrome. Let me know if you have any questions. It's kind of how we approach things. Not like, is it okay? Just like, hey, we're coming. You got a question? We're happy to answer. And then Mason showed up to hip hop and it was her favorite thing ever. And she was in heaven and she looked forward to it all week. And she was a different dancer and she did her darndest. She did her absolute best. But she still would be off count or out of formation or whatever it was. And dance is interesting because everyone is doing the same thing at the same time. Fast forward to her first recital, and we quickly realized that we were at like a dance mom studio once recital season came. It was so intense. We could do an entire podcast episode about Mason's first dance recital. But so we're practicing, and I realize about a third of the way in, we're about 6 weeks out of the recital, that it's not working. And I had a moment as her mom of, I don't want her to embarrass herself. I don't want her to be that kid with Down syndrome on stage. Everyone's like, oh, that's sweet. Okay. And a little uncomfortable. And what are we going to do about this? Because she's going to need some more support. So I end up having a conversation with different people and the head of the dance studio. Her name is Allison. She's become a dear friend since. And I just said, Allison and I just worked it out and figured out some extra practices and some not having her move around in her formation so much and some peers that she can mirror and things like that. And so fast forward, it's dress rehearsal and Mason had been slaying it. She'd been doing so great. And we get to dress rehearsal and it's just different enough with the lighting and the sound and a stage and a curtain and, you know, things she's not familiar with. And familiarity, expectations are important to Mason. To know what to expect makes her feel safe. If she doesn't know what to expect, she doesn't feel safe. I think that's true for all humans.
Yeah.
Her filter is a little different, right? The way that she approaches it. So it's time, the music goes on, she won't go on stage. She's on the side, they run through the whole routine. I'm next to her backstage, like, all right, girl, you got this. You can do this. You've been doing this. You've got this. And she's like, I can't do it. It's too hard. I can't do it. It's too hard. So through the entire routine, this is her and my dialogue back and forth. And then it ends. Allison gets the microphone. She says, hey, we are going to run that again for the formations, but it wasn't for the formation. It was for Macy. And then they run it again. Mason still is like, I'm not going out there. Allison's like, I don't know what to do. I'm like, I don't know what to do. Mason's looking at us like, I don't know what to do. And so we walk out and we're walking around outside. And I know that if we leave, she will feel so defeated that she will not do the dance recital. And on a side note, we had 20 people coming to this dance recital. They paid $20 each to watch her dance for 3 minutes, right? And so I'm thinking of those people too. And I mostly focus on Mason. I'm not telling her any of those thoughts, but those are in my head. We're going around and time's passing and I'm thinking, we gotta go. And then she just says to me, Mom, I'm ready to dance. And I'm like, all right, babe. And so we walk backstage. And I said, let's tell Allison. So she taps Miss Allison and says, Miss Allison, I'm ready to dance. And Allison says, you got it. And without missing a beat, you know, they're in the middle of a rehearsal. So there's dancers on stage, there's dancers on backstage and on deck. And without missing a beat, she looks to the people doing the lighting and the music and all those things. And it's like, hey, we're going to need to pull up Uptown Funk, which was the dance, the song Dancing Macy danced to. We're going to pull up Uptown Funk and we're going to get the lights for that. And I need you to find all of the dancers who are available to dance this routine. And it just so happened that all of them, except one, all of them were on deck for their next routine, which was their ballet class. So they're all in big cream tutus and black satin gloves. And we notice that they're standing there. One little girl goes, what? We already did that twice. And another little girl is like, well, I don't want to, we can't do that dance in this costume. And Allison catches that they're there and turns around and she goes, oh, you absolutely can dance to hip hop in what you're wearing. And no one has to do this, but I expect you to. And then another little girl raises her hand and she goes, I want to dance with Macy. And then it was like this chorus of hands raising and people saying, I want to dance with Macy. I want to dance with Macy. And so the next song is Uptown Funk. Everyone goes on stage, including Macy. And Allison's like, get in the audience, go watch her. And so I walk in the audience and I'm just hysterical, weeping, because it was a holy moment of everybody bending and flexing to make it work for her. And I look at the stage and there's a dozen little dancers, all of them in cream colored tutus and like full length satin gloves, and Mason in like drop crotch harem pants and a red crop top. And they're dancing to Uptown Funk for the third time, quite a few songs too late. And it, with the kind of production this was, it was hundreds of dancers and tech people and backstage people making it work for Mason. And at the end, she runs off stage and all of the adults backstage are weeping and I'm weeping, and and she runs in my arms and gives me a hug. And she says, Mommy, I did it. I did it. I said, of course you did it. You're the best dancer I know. You're the bravest kid I know. And then the next night at the recital, she danced and slayed it. And, you know, word had kind of gotten around with all the dancers. So everyone kind of stopped. And I just sat backstage, like surrounded by feathers and sequins and tulle. And everyone's cheering Macy on. And she and everyone in the audience is there. And and she did it. And it, her dance studio was changed by that. And her instructor will tell you, the woman who owns the studio had never had a student with Down syndrome in her studio before. And it changed her forever. And all the little girls who danced with her. So that's one of my favorite.
Beautiful. I remember getting the video from Josh, and it was the greatest Uptown Funk I've ever seen in my entire life. So that's amazing.
Prioritizing your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. With AG1, just one scoop of this foundational nutrition supplement delivers your daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. With AG1, you're giving your body high-quality nutrition with ingredients that are sourced for absorption, potency, and nutrient density. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/odyssey. That's drinkag1.com/odyssey. Check it out.
I know that you said if people were more educated on Down syndrome, they would be less likely to be negative towards it. Mm-hmm. Can you talk just a little bit about what some of the biggest misconceptions around Down syndrome are, and maybe how parents can educate their kids or even their adult friends about it so that we can change some of this narrative?
I think about my own story with when I was first introduced to Down syndrome, and it was because my mom was a special education teacher when I was a little kid. And so I think proximity is huge, and it's all about proximity and relationship. And my mom taught me that it was just about, these are human beings too. There's nothing to be scared of. And she didn't say that. She was just in proximity to them. And I saw how they changed my mom. And then it was, oh, there's a relationship there. And I think it becomes, it's a human being, it's a humanity thing. And so it wasn't what my mom was teaching these kids or what we're teaching our kids or what, you know, schools are teaching our kids, is what would it look like to actually learn from people with Down syndrome? What would it look like for us to switch that and say, oh, wait, let's pause real quick and hear what unlearning can we do? So yeah, I think it just started for me as a little kid, just proximity. It looks like going to the park. It looks like hanging out at church and community. I mean, post-COVID, we're going to be hanging out again. Mm-hmm. And I think it just looks like an invitation. It looks like a conversation. It looks like it's going to, maybe it'll be awkward sometimes when you might want to ask a question or I don't know, it might be something that is unfamiliar, but it's okay to be unfamiliar, but you need to start with a conversation. You need to start with, Mason's really good at saying, hi, what's your name? Just say hi back. Just say hi back and go from there.
Yeah, I think there's some like real concrete things that can be done. And especially if you're raising kids, I mean, social media and books and movies and toys, what kind of representation is in your home? Who are you following? What accounts are you following? Because if you don't have direct proximity to somebody with a disability or someone who's different than you in any regard, right? It's going back to that idea of what we're really doing here is teaching ourselves and our children to embrace different, to celebrate different, to see it and to say, this is great, you know, not to like be hush-hush about it or feel uncomfortable around it, or to say, hey, I'm kind of uncomfortable around this because it's different, but I've been around different so many times. I know that it won't be uncomfortable forever. And so if who are you following on Instagram? What shows are you watching? What books are you reading? And unfortunately, when it comes to disability, you're going to have to look a little bit harder than you will with some other groups of people, but people are out there, people with disabilities advocate for themselves, you know? So find what they have to say, listen to what they have to say, follow along with what they have to say. Invite them into your lives in the ways that you can.
I can remember when we were hanging out on the regular, having to have a conversation with people that I happen to be related to about their use of the R word. That like indignant position on political correctness afforded them the luxury of using whatever words they want, whenever they want. They didn't have to feel bad about it. And I was like, well, if you want to come into our house, you're going to have to find a way to release that as a part of your vernacular because it's just not accepted here. Yeah. I'm curious how you have found ways to call people out for being uneducated or stereotyping or saying inappropriate things without sounding like an ass, without like, you know, alienating them from wanting to actually come into community. But inevitably, I'm sure that you run into people saying dumb stuff, uneducated stuff on the regular. Is there something that you've had to employ that affords them just enough grace to still allow them into your life, but also calls them to task if they've crossed a line or said something stupid?
I feel like this is a tricky one because there isn't like a script. I think people want a script. It's so case by case, and you can tell by someone's posture. I also think because of who is in our lives the most, they're just not doing that anymore, you know? So it's so rare that it happens. And we did have a newer friend the other day throw it out in a conversation. I missed it. But what was really great is the other friend there looked at her and said, you can't say that. Just straight up. And I'm not paying, I had no idea this was happening. But at the end of our hangout time, this friend who said the R word came over to me and she's like, I am mortified. I am so sorry. That was like my teenage self coming back and saying that. And I'm like, I don't know. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And then she explained it all to me. And it's like, people are going to say it and they're going to feel, they might feel bad about it. Or if you point it out, I think that it is, you just have to say, oh yeah, we don't say that. Actually, that's a harmful word. And then if people want to get into it, I think you have to choose a time and place for that, you know?
Yeah.
But I do find for us personally, I do believe that the majority of people are really trying to do the best they can with what they know and what they have. And so for the most part, when somebody says something that is like way off, you can usually have a really good, easy dialogue about it. And they're like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry. I didn't even realize. I'm going to try harder, you know, for the most part.
I like to give people the benefit of the doubt for sure. But sometimes you run into the person and you're like, this isn't even a fight worth taking up. Go with God. And when I say go, I mean, go away from here and enjoy your life outside of here. You were going to say something, Joshua.
Well, no, I think about people's reaction when they first find out maybe a mom has a kid that she's pregnant with that has Down syndrome. And their first reaction is, I'm sorry. That's most people's reaction is, I'm sorry. And you have to bring them into, oh, well, what are you sorry about? And so then there's a, if we could open our lives up a little bit and just show them there's nothing to be sorry about. This is, we may look different, we might act a little different, but we're human beings too, you know? And I think that shows up in different places. And I think representation is huge. And I think that Macy and Augie being in general ed classrooms, and that we can step into spaces with our work in different places that we can represent in different ads and different venues, that we keep showing up as we are who we are. It actually says more, I think, the unspoken of seeing us in different places. And we celebrate when we see a model with, I think it was, what was the last one that we just saw? Was it a Gucci ad?
A woman with Down syndrome that just did a big Gucci campaign. It's amazing.
Yeah. So
there was a family that was, I saw a family that was represented in a Gap ad recently that had, the Avis family was in a Gap ad, and I am here for inclusion. I'm also here for the handsomeness of the Avises being represented in an ad. So good work, you guys. I love that. Yeah. If someone who's listening is interested in resources on how to better educate themselves about Down syndrome, is there something that you point people to? I mean, yes, they should buy your books, but is there like a place where they can go to just become a little better educated about what it is and what it means and anything else?
Yeah, there's a couple big organizations in the United States. One is the Global Down Syndrome Network. And Global Down Syndrome, everything that you need to know about Down syndrome in terms of like stats and health and all of that, you're going to find at Global Down Syndrome. And then the National Down Syndrome Society and the National Down Syndrome Congress. So the NDSS and the NDSC, they both have so much information and are doing, they're just huge organizations doing awesome stuff in the Down syndrome community, for sure.
Awesome. We'll put links to both organizations in the show notes so that people, as you're interested, as you're listening, if you want to dive into and get some more information or educate yourself on what is Down syndrome and what does it mean, dive in. Please do the work. Yeah. So obviously, you're not just passionate about Down syndrome. You are also, as we've talked about, a multi-ethnic adoptive family, which you've obviously spoken very candidly about, but we're living in a crazy world where now the conversation around race is something that is wholly and totally different, and hopefully continues to be wholly and totally different until we get to a place where things feel like there is just and right for all people. How has what's happened in the aftermath of George Floyd and everything that's happening in the world hit you personally because of having a child of color, and are you thinking differently now about the kind of work that you might do when it comes to shouting worth or making room against the backdrop of race, given every single thing that's happening in the world?
Oh gosh. It weighs heavy on me every second of every day that my daughter, who presents as Black, so she's African and Guatemalan, but she is a Black girl, she will be a Black woman, is being raised by white parents.
Yeah.
It is such a heavy part of her narrative. And that is not because white is bad. It is just the reality for her being a Black girl raised by white parents will be a heavy part of her narrative for her whole life. And that is so heavy. And to see what's happening right now in the race conversation in the United States, it just makes it heavier.
Yeah.
And so how do we help her navigate that well as her parents? How do we navigate that well? I think for me, I spoke out more, and then I used to speak out more about race and what that meant for myself and my family and my daughter. And I now am just back to just listening, because I thought I had undone so much, and I have. I've been working on, I started the work of undoing white supremacy in my own life in college. And that was, I mean, I know that I sound and look very young, but that was 28 years ago. 28 years ago?
No,
38?
No.
18 years ago. That's wrong. That was 18
she
years ago.
She started college when she was 9.
When I was 10, I started college.
Doogie Howser.
Right. But I started to unmantle those things in my own life 18 years ago in college. And in 18 years later, I think at some point in my younger years, thought I had arrived somewhere as, I don't know, understanding the complexities of racism in the United States. And I think anyone who felt that, any white person who felt that, all of us are like, oh, I even with all of the undoing I've tried to do, there's so much more I'm doing to do. And my role right now is to listen. And that includes, I think I have been listening more to adoptees of color, Black adoptees raised in white families. I've been listening to their voices more than ever, because that is Truly's voice. You know, that's a representation of Truly's voice. And so I'm just listening. That is my work right now in the advocacy of race, is to be a listener.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, here's the thing. It's like, listen, read, immerse yourself in documentaries or podcasts, but like find any and every resource that can help you become a step closer to understanding with an appreciation that you will never, ever fully understand. It has been my perspective on it. And I've been grateful for the people who've, you know, afforded me an opportunity to just get a little bit closer. But I too, there was hubris in a younger version of me who believed that, oh, I've read some books and I've watched a documentary, so now I understand. This is going to be a forever journey toward understanding. And I love the idea of listening as a thing that is the priority and should be, I think, for any person who is interested and not a person of color.
Yeah.
So Heather, you've shared the message that easier is not always better. I mean, if there were a through line in your journey, that may in fact be it. Specifically, you've talked about how you could live a life in which you don't take your kids to restaurants or on airplanes because that's easier, but you don't want the world to be deprived of your children. Will you talk just a little bit about this idea that easier isn't always better and the gift that pushing into harder sometimes produces?
I'll preface it by saying my priority is my kids with Down syndrome. I don't do these things, all three of my kids, but we're not doing the things we're doing at their expense to teach the world a lesson. When we're stepping into spaces that are hard, it's good for them too. And it's harder for me than for them. They're usually doing fine. My kids with Down syndrome live in a world that doesn't work for them. We've already established this. And when people have asked me, what's the hardest thing about raising a child with Down syndrome? My answer is the world that doesn't accept them. And what my kids do still is show up, and they show up, and they show up, and they show up every day. And every day, as soon as they step outside our front door, something is going to be difficult for them. And they still step outside, usually with uninhibited joy and bravery. And so I'm watching this unfold as I get to raise them. And the lesson is just so true for everybody, right? So easy is fine, but when you do the hard things, you're going to be better. And I watch my kids do that. And in order for them to become the best version of themselves, they're up against just, quote, normal things that any human's up against. But then they're also up against a world that doesn't see their value and worth. And they're still there and they're still showing up. So they have been my greatest teachers. And then in applying that to my own life, the greatest things that we have accomplished in life and have created, made us better humans, are the hardest things that we've faced. And so it's like the proof is in the pudding, right?
Yeah. There's so much of your work that is just a reflection of the lessons that you have been taught because of the way that your children experience the world. And there's such beauty in that. I love it so much. Knowing what you know, how incredible these children of yours are, how do you deal with the pain that comes from a world that fails them as regularly as it seems to?
It's hard. I don't know, because it's, you want to protect them, but then you also want them to have that lesson of life as well. And so there's a balance of trying to protect them from the things that you know you should protect them from, and then also letting them step into it. I mean, today I watched Heather watch Mason do this distance learning thing, and she's been set up with no supports at all. I mean, we just started, to be fair to the teachers and to the administrators. We just started, but it's not working. And I watched Heather step back, and I think you said out loud, I'm not going to help her. And we want them to step into the spaces, into the all the places that they can and do the best they possibly can without this learned helplessness, and then watch them, and they may do it differently, and that's okay. And so you have to look at the standards too. When it comes to like safety, yeah, we're going to step in, but I think let's revisit maybe the grid that it's been set up in and what we're protecting them from. So, and school is a great example.
I mean, by the way, there's something amazing in that lesson for a parent of any child, because sure. I think there's a predisposition we have as parents to try and keep our kids from experiencing pain yeah. beyond a certain threshold, that if they were to have the opportunity to process it, may in fact afford them learning or some yeah. grit or some tenacity, or maybe like your children, they find a different way to do it. That is yeah. a departure from something conventional that in having figured it out, arms them to be able to handle whatever ends up showing up next. There's a gift in that. There's a beauty in that.
For sure. Yeah. I think that, I mean, going back to what you're asking, we do just tangibly, we have friends who have kids with Down syndrome that we carve out time to be around because it is a healing, restful space. And so that's important. But to what Josh was saying, and I'm going to tell a quick story that I think is really appropriate. The way that we handle it all is we follow our kids' lead a lot. And so Mason's in sixth grade and we're doing this distance learning thing. And like Josh mentioned, there's no support in place. The teachers are heroes. Everyone's a hero, right? Everyone's a hero except for COVID is the worst. And it is an impossible situation. It is a lose-lose. I think everyone can agree. So Mason's in a general education musical theater classroom. So she's in sixth grade. There's like 35 kids, all virtual. And she's unable right now to read her assignments, to click on the right links, to know what's expected of her without us helping. Blessed, we have three children. She's got six teachers. I'm not even listening to my voicemails. Like, I don't know what's happening. So I have no idea what her class assignments are. She shows up and it turns out that they were assigned to do a monologue. And the teacher had chosen about six different monologues from six different movies. So she's like, who wants to go? And not everyone has to do it. This was yesterday, like 24 hours ago. So a couple kids do their monologues and this is Mason's jam. And so she raises her hand and I'm sitting next to her and I'm like, oh, no, babe, put your hand down. And the teacher calls on her and says, Mason, you ready to go? She says, I'm ready. And the teacher says, what monologue are you doing? There's no answer because we didn't know the assignment. And so then I do chime in and I'm like, it's this constant figuring out, do I say something? Do I not? Yeah. Like, do I let her just be who she's going to be? Do I try to make her, conform. I don't know, conform? Is it, am I projecting myself onto her? Is this like, is she uncomfortable? Am I uncomfortable? It's constant. And so I do say, oh, she's just really excited. We're going to look through the assignment a little bit more. Right, Mason? She's like, okay. She turns off the computer. I go sit away from her now at the other part of the room because I also have a full-time job. Right. And so I'm doing my work. And then six or seven more kids go, Mason's pumped. And so she raises her hand again. And the teacher calls on her again. And she's like, you ready now, Mason? And she says, yes. And she stands up and pushes her chair aside. And she says, hi, I'm Mason. I'm a singer. I'm an actor. And I'm going to do Wicked Defying Gravity. And granted, Mason, part of her disability with Down syndrome limits her speech. So most of this was unintelligible to someone who doesn't know her. And I'm across the room going, oh my gosh, all I can think of is there are 34 sixth graders who have never met her before, who are just like snickering and having negative thoughts about her. And I want to run across the room and tackle her and turn the computer off to save her, right? And I'm like so scared for her. And she does her song and she does a little spin and she bows and sits down and puts herself back on mute and looks at me across the room and she goes, Mom, I did it. And I just start crying because I'm like, you did. And I was this close to stopping you. And chances are some of those little sixth graders are twerps and they are making fun of you. But there's also a really good chance that some of those little sixth graders have never seen someone so uninhibited in who they are, and they are now inspired and they want to know you. And so you keep showing up, babe. Yeah. You keep showing up.
Yeah.
She just gave permission to a bunch of insecure sixth graders to be themselves and sing Wicked, even if it wasn't one of the six assigned monologues. Let's go. All right, let's wrap this up. On this show, every single week, I like to ask our guests to share a single big takeaway that someone who is listening could implement in their lives today to make their life just a little bit better. Is there one thing, I know it's an impossible question, that you would offer to this audience that if they were to do it today, would bring them just a little more peace, a little more joy, a little more goodness in their life?
The thing that I would say is who you are, exactly who you are, exactly where you are is enough. Is enough. You need to be nothing more. Exactly who you are is enough. And so show up wherever you're at as exactly who you are.
Amen.
Amen to that. Ladies and gentlemen, Heather and Josh Avis, they're good human beings. They are doing good work. I am confident that every single person listening is now in love with you the way that I am. If people who are listening are interested in getting to know your work better or following you, say again, the Instagram is The Lucky Few Official.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. Is there a website that people can go to if they're interested?
Yeah, go to theluckyfew.com. We also have a podcast, which is an amazing resource, and that's theluckyfewpodcast.com. And everything else is The Lucky Few Official.
You guys are amazing. I love you. I appreciate you sharing your story. Ladies and gentlemen, listening in the audience, I am sure that you enjoyed this conversation today. And if you did, I hope that you will take a picture of the podcast, that you will tag myself, that you'll tag The Lucky Few Official, and that you will tell every human being that you've ever met in your entire life about this episode, that they so that they will also listen to it. Between now and then, be yourself and know that you are enough exactly as you are. We will see you next week on another episode of Rise Together.
Rise Together is hosted by me, Dave Hollis. This show is produced by Chelsea Harfouche and edited by Andrew Weller, with production support by Sterling Coates. Cameron Berkman is our executive producer. Rise Together is a product of The Hollis Company.